This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest,
I'm World Lutheran News Digest host Kip Allen. The Crusades, a series of wars fought between the armies of Christendom and Islam, clashed in the Holy Land for two centuries. What were the wars about? Who won? What are the implications for today? Were they wars of aggression by Christian Europe against Muslim Asia? Or were they defensive actions by a desperate West against a rapidly expanding and aggressive Islamic force? Dr. Timothy Furnish holds a Ph.D. in Islamic history. He's an author and consultant to the U.S. Special Operations Command and the intelligence community dealing with the Islamic world. I speak with Dr. Furnish today about the Crusades on World Lutheran News Digest.
And now today's Fast Track.
I'm Buzz Ulrich with news in brief of interest to Lutherans worldwide. In the United States of America, the state of Colorado's Supreme Court will not review the case of a Denver area cake artist ordered by the state government to bake and decorate cakes to celebrate same-sex marriages. Lawyers for Jack Phillips, owner of Masterpiece Cake Shop in Lakewood, Colorado, said they are evaluating his legal options. Jeremy Tedesco, senior counsel for Alliance Defending Freedom, said in a formal statement following the news on Monday, "Because of his Christian belief that marriage is between one man and one woman, Phillips in 2012 declined to bake a cake celebrating the same-sex wedding of Charlie Craig and David Mullins. After the two men filed a discrimination complaint against Phillips and Masterpiece Cake Shop, the Colorado Civil Rights Commission ruled that the bakery violated the state's anti-discrimination policy. In August, the Colorado Court of Appeals ordered that Phillips and his staff must bake cakes for gay marriages. The state Supreme Court recently declined to review that order. The Colorado chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union praised the High Court's decision. Tedesco, the lawyer at the Christian Legal Aid Group Alliance Defending Freedom, said Jack, who has happily served people of all backgrounds for years, simply exercised the long-cherished American freedom to decline to use his artistic talents to promote a message and event with which he disagrees. Phillips also does not bake cakes for bachelor parties, Halloween celebrations, anything dealing with witchcraft and demons, or ideas that violate his Christian beliefs. A measure that attempted to take the power away from Missouri lawmakers and give it to the people to decide how to handle the marriage and religious liberty debate has died in committee after three Republicans voted against it. The state of Missouri's Alliance for Freedom had been lobbying in favor of the measure, Senate Joint Resolution 39, to pass through the state House of Representatives. In March, the Missouri Senate passed it after an historic 36-hour filibuster by Democrats. If the bill had passed the House, it would not have gone to the governor's desk for approval. Instead, it would have become a ballot initiative, giving every Missouri citizen a chance to weigh in on the issue. Supporters say if SJR 39 were to take effect, it would ban government discrimination against people of faith because of their beliefs about marriage. Big business has played a significant role in the measure's ultimate destiny, rallying against it as part of a coalition called Missouri Competes. In total, more than 150 Missouri businesses opposed what they called a discrimination measure, including big-name companies such as Pfizer, MasterCard, and Marriott.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. ഇത് ലോക ലൂത്രൻ വാർത്താ പരിപാടിയാകുന്നു.
I'm Kip Allen, host of World Lutheran News Digest. My guest today, Dr. Timothy Furnish, who's an expert on things Arabic and Islamic. And today we're going to be talking about the Crusades. People think that we know about the Crusades, but I think there's an old saying, who controls the present controls the past, and who controls the past controls the future. And we're getting a lot of distorted views on what actually happened. The Western media has some views of it. And, of course, the Arabic and Islamic media have a different view of it. And what really happened? Dr. Furnish, would you perhaps tell us a little bit about yourself and about your bona fides, and we'll get on to that topic.
Well, I like to tell people I'm a recovering college professor. I taught for 7 years world and Middle East history at the college level. I had previously done a PhD in Islamic world and African history at Ohio State, and before that I was in the U.S. Army as an Arabic linguist. And so since leaving teaching college, I've been consulting, writing, and I have also worked as an advisor to the U.S. military on Islamic world issues.
And you have your website, which is Mahdi Watch, and also you're an author of many books. I think the two that you've just recently released are Sex, Lies, and the Caliphate, as well as 10 Years Captivation with the Mahdi's Camps.
Yes, sir, two on Islam, and one before that on Islam also. But actually, my latest book, Kip, believe it or not, is on Tolkien. It's a Middle Earth book. It just came out this week, which is not exactly relevant to our discussion, but it is an interesting book.
And it'd be a fun read, too. I've really enjoyed Tolkien. Let's talk a bit about the Crusades. I think, you know, from my point of view, from my study of it, the Crusades really were a series of ultimately unsuccessful defensive wars by the Christian West against the encroachment of the Islamic East. What is the present-day view of the Crusades? And I think more importantly, how does the Arab world and the Islamic world view them?
Well, your view is the historically accurate one, yes, very correct. What we have had foisted upon us in the United States, partly out of ignorance, I think, of the sad state of public schools over the last 40 or 50 years, and partly out of, in more recent years, a more sort of activist agenda by certain people in the political realm. Most Americans have been convinced that, sort of put it crudely, that Arab Muslims around the turn of the first millennium AD were living peacefully and sitting in coffee shops sipping coffee when all of a sudden proto-French crusaders showed up and started lopping off their heads. And we see this
reflected in the news today. Just will be back right after these messages.
Some of your listeners may. I certainly recall this not long after 9/11. I think it was just a few weeks after 9/11. President Bush gave a speech, I don't remember the venue, but he gave a speech and said that we were going to go on a crusade to get the people that did this. And, of course, I think President Bush caught more flack for using the term crusade in that way than bin Laden and al-Qaeda did for actually perpetrating the bombings. But basically what the American body politic and public has by and large come to believe is that the crusades were just unmitigated aggression, done in the name of Christianity, particularly, of course, Catholic Christianity. There was nothing redeeming or good about them at all. They are one of the major reasons for current Islamic aggression toward the United States, and none of those things really is true.
Well, one thing I think to point out is that the Holy Land prior to the Holy Land had been under Christian control for about three centuries and before the Arab armies came in and swept it away.
Yes, again, the Roman Empire, of course, by the time of the Crusades, it had broken in half some centuries before that. The western half, of course, fell, and people always famously speak of the fall of Rome. But what they forget is that the entire eastern half of the Roman Empire, which historians refer to as the Byzantine Empire, which was a Christian empire, continued and was still there and bore the brunt of the attacks of the new Islamic religion and its Arab and later Turkish warriors. So, yes, about half, 40 to 50% of the territory of the Byzantine Empire, which included the Holy Land, Jerusalem, Syria, Egypt, much of North Africa, was conquered by Muslims in the 7th and 8th and 9th century AD. Muslim armies made it all the way into, well, it wasn't France yet, but up through the Iberian Peninsula into the Frankish kingdoms by the 8th century AD, as I'm sure as you know, were famously stopped in the year 732 by Charles Martel and his Christian army. But there were several other aspects of this that a lot of people don't know about. There was an incessant Muslim slave trade where Muslim corsairs and what later would be known as corsairs, Muslim pirates, and Muslims working for as armies of existing states in North Africa and the Middle East would raid Italy, southern, what would later, of course, be France, the Iberian Peninsula, Greece, capture people, capture Christians and enslave them. This was going on for centuries. Rome itself was attacked several times in the 8th and 9th and 10th centuries. And then one might also well argue that the actual proximate cause for the Crusades, which of course were declared by Pope Urban in 1095 after receiving a letter from the Byzantine Emperor asking for help, that the proximate cause for the Crusades, certainly the First Crusade, was that in the year 1007 or so, the Fatimid Caliph, the Fatimid Islamic ruler of Egypt, a guy named Al-Hakam, had sent an army up to Jerusalem and had razed to the ground, R-A-Z-E-D, razed to the ground the Church of the Holy Sepulcher, which is, of course, the church that was built over the site of the crucifixion. Now, that was later rebuilt by the Crusaders, and if you go to Jerusalem today, there's quite a large edifice there, but that was built later. But what Christians knew of around that time was that Muslims had conquered tens of thousands of square miles of Christian territory. They had invaded into Europe. They had destroyed the church built, again, on the site of the crucifixion. And they saw Muslims quite geopolitically and theologically, logically, as people who were out to wipe them out.
And I think the Arab and the Turkish empires made no bones about it. They had every intention of ruling Europe.
Right, because later, after the, well, about the time of the Crusades, maybe a century or so before, you had, besides the fact that you had the Arabs, who were the original Muslims, you had a new group of people coming in from Central Asia, the Turks, various tribes of Turks, who converted to Islam and who had much more, I guess you could say, sort of the nomadic zeal of the warrior, which was then transferred into jihad, theologically, by conversion to Islam, than had the Arabs for a while. They renewed the attacks on the Holy Land and on the Byzantine Empire. And in fact, again, one of the major reasons for the request by the Byzantine Emperor for help from the West was a famous battle, which I dare say most people in the West and the United States probably don't even know about. It's the Battle of Manzikert in 1071 AD, when the eastern border of the Byzantine Empire, which had held solid for several centuries, was finally broached by Turkish armies, Turkish Muslim armies, which then began rapidly, in just the space of a few decades, eroding what was left of the territorial integrity of the Byzantine Empire. But yes, you're exactly right. There were no bones about it. The successors of these Turks would later be a tribe a bit later called the Ottoman Turks, who then, of course, finally did conquer Constantinople in 1453, and created a very, very large Islamic empire, who then set out invading Europe from, instead of the southwest, from the southeast. And they are the bane of European and Christian rulers, as even Luther writes about.
And one of the things about the Ottomans to remember, when they took Constantinople, one of the jewels of Christian architecture was the Cathedral of Santa Sophia. And they converted that to a mosque. They desecrated it. And then, of course, there was the concept of the Janissaries, where they went into Christian areas and forced Christian children into their service, both into the military and later on into the bureaucracy.
Right. The sort of shock troops of the Ottoman Empire were young Christian boys taken from Bulgaria and Romania and Greece and places like that, forcibly converted to Islam, given an education, granted, but converted to Islam, who then became officers in this sort of shock troop contingent of the Ottoman army. But that would come later. But as you were talking about, and you're exactly right, what you have at the time of the Crusades, you had almost four centuries of incessant and unmitigated Islamic conquest of Christian territories. And, you know, again, part of the mythology that's put out in high school textbooks and history textbooks and in media these days is, you know, Islam is supposedly was more tolerant than Christianity. And I guess that's true if you consider that the status of Dhimmi, D-H-I-M-M-I, which is a second-class Jew or Christian under Islamic rule, is considered to be tolerant. It's sort of tolerant in the same way that, you know, I guess blacks were tolerated before the era of civil rights.
Sort of a Jim Crow law.
Yes, it's a bit silly to call that really sort of tolerant. And, of course, that may have been the theological, you know, sort of mandate in many ways, a theological, I guess, ideal, I should say. But the historical reality is very different. As I mentioned earlier, Muslim raiders enslaved Christians en masse, which technically is a violation of Islamic law, but yet it still went on for centuries and centuries.
And yet, even today, it still goes on. We're reading about it with the Islamic State of the Levant.
Right. Islamic State is basically, well, has been accused of resurrecting it, although I'm not sure that's exactly true. I'm not sure that it ever really went away. And this is another issue that, well, perhaps we don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but it's an argument that I always make, that the Islamic State is actually very Islamic, because in invoking the idea of slavery, particularly of people like these Yazidis that they enslaved, which who are probably sort of the last remnant of the old Zoroastrian religion, they are perfectly following Islamic law, which says you can enslave people that aren't Jews and Christians and Muslims, and they're clearly doing that.
So what is the view that they hold in the Middle East and the Muslim world of the Crusades? How do they see it?
Yes, the Crusades are one of the few things that everyone in the Middle East that's Muslim agrees upon. It has long since been accepted as, if you'll pardon the pun, gospel truth in Islam, that the Crusades were, of course, unmitigated aggression against peaceful Muslims who are minding their own business. It's interesting, my research over the years, I found that it turned out that the Crusades were sort of largely forgotten after the year 1291. The last Crusader outpost, the Crusades lasted from 1095 to 1291. There were 8 or 9 Crusades, or even more, depending on how you count them. There were actually a few Crusades even after 1291 up in what is now Lithuania. Some of the Lithuanians were still pagans and not even converted to Christianity, and some of the Crusaders actually fought against them. But when you say the Crusades, I think most people, and probably rightly so, think of the Middle East. These Crusades lasted less than 200 years, and they ended in 1291 when the last Crusader outpost at the town of Acre was wiped out by the Mamluks, who were the rulers of Egypt. And the Crusades then, although the first Crusade was successful in taking Jerusalem, the Crusaders lost Jerusalem after 88 years. In the year 1187, never got it back. They held onto some other territories, but again, by 1291, these were all gone. So the Crusades ultimately were a Muslim victory, and largely forgotten for that reason. And it turns out that if you really sort of study the issue, and the great Islamic scholar Bernard Lewis has done a lot of really good work on this, that the idea of the Crusades as sort of victimology for the Arab Muslims really is a reflection of Enlightenment writing, people like Voltaire and Gibbon and other people who sort of used the Crusades as a club with which to beat Catholic Europe for its many sins. And a lot of these writings by these Enlightenment thinkers wound up in the 18th and 19th and early 20th century getting translated into Ottoman Turkish and then some of them in Arabic, and were seized upon by Muslims in the Middle East as, you know, evidence of what had been happening in recent years, you know, with the dismemberment of the Ottoman Empire after World War I and colonialism, British and French colonialism, particular in the area, that this had always been what the Europeans did. The Crusades were sort of lumped into that category, although the Crusades really had nothing to do with colonialism and what the British and the French did after World War I, for instance. So, anyway, what I'm trying to say that the idea in the Middle East, particularly among the Arab Muslims, and to a certain extent now among all the world's Muslims, is that the Crusades were just typical Western aggression. And this is why, for instance, and they have great resonance in the Muslim mind. This is why, for instance, bin Laden and al-Baghdadi and other even non-terrorist Islamic fundamentalists and other groups always refer to us, for instance, as Crusaders. We are always Crusaders. We're never referred to as Americans. And so it is used as a sort of propaganda trope because it has such weight, and it really, really registers with people. What's sort of sad and about that, however, again, is to go back to what we were talking about initially, is that this view is basically the view of the American left and of much of the U.S. educational establishment. It's the same view, the same propagandistic view that Arab Muslims advanced the Crusades.
Well, two questions from that. One would be, why would the intellectual left adopt that kind of a concept? And secondly, this seems to play into the concept of victimhood that is so popular in the Arab world right now. All their problems seem to be as a result of some kind of giant conspiracy against them.
Well, I think the two are related. Actually, probably doctoral dissertations need to be written on each one. But the first one, why the left would accept that, I think the overall picture is because I think it's clear if you go back to the Enlightenment, up through Marx in the 19th century, which are the two main currents of thought that the American left has been inculcated in. Both of those major currents of thought, Voltaire and Marx, if you will, said that the biggest enemy of freedom and the biggest enemy of the people is, of course, the church. Now, they meant the Catholic Church, but any organized church will fill in, depending on your context, if you have that viewpoint. And you see this, I see this all the time, Kip. You read it on comments, I see it in articles, people bring this up in certain venues where I talk. It's the idea that the real oppressive structure in the world, no matter how many people ISIS beheads, or how many people they enslave, or how many people in the Islamic world based on Pew data, and people can look this up, 2012, 2013 Pew data, how many large majorities of Muslims support things like stoning for adultery and apostasy. No matter how much of that data you throw at people, many in the left, not all, but many in the left will say, but Christianity. In fact, one of the typical arguments, I've been on a couple of national radio shows, one prominent leftist one, and every time I brought something up about how what ISIS did was had roots in Islamic teaching, the response was automatically, but the Crusades. It was sort of sophomoric, but that's what I got. So many on the left are convinced, it's an article of faith among them, no pun intended, that the Christianity is always the foremost opponent. Okay? And so, and sort of the flip side of that coin, if you will, as I see it, is that many on the left also think that anyone overseas, particularly of a religion that's not Christian, are automatically victims.
With the exception of Israel.
With the exception of Israel, of course. But anybody that's non-Christian or non-Jewish, if you will, let's amend that. That's a good point. But for instance, this is why the left refuses. So many on the left refuse to see Christians as victims. Although study after study shows that the most persecuted people on the face of this planet are Christians in Muslim countries particularly. But the left, because ideology trumps facts, the left cannot bring themselves to admit that. So what you have is sort of a perfect storm of all these leftist ideas where basically you take at face value the propaganda, the Islamic propaganda, and you just go with it.
What about the cult of victimhood and conspiracy within the Muslim world?
Yeah, that's another aspect of this. And by the way, there's a very good book on this. I guess it's 10 or 12 years ago now. I don't know if you've seen it, by Daniel Pipes, called The Hidden Hand, which is specifically about conspiracy theories in the Muslim world, where they are rampant. Again, not to use the currency metaphor too much, but I think those are two sides of the same coin. People that feel themselves victimized and can't bring themselves to admit that something in their own ideology or religion might be contributing to that will always try to find someone else to blame it on. So the conspiracy theories, and it is interesting. I have many Middle Eastern friends from different countries, and I keep track of a lot of this stuff, but it's interesting the pretzel logic which these people will exercise in order to explain away. I have had Muslim friends tell me that ISIS is, a product of the CIA, it's a product of Iran, although most of its victims are Shiites. It's a product of Turkey. It's a product of Saudi Arabia. It's a product of the Bush family, a product of Obama. Fill in the blank. ISIS can't simply be an understandable, if regrettable, outgrowth of Sunni Islamic fundamentalist belief. It can't be that. It has to be some outside power manipulating it. So part of this is just sort of a refusal or a wish to not deal with the unsavory aspects of a belief system, which, again, Islam, and I always tell people this, unfortunately, ISIS is an Islamic, operates on Islamic ideology. It's literalism. It takes what the Quran said in the 7th century and what the Hadith said, the alleged sayings of Muhammad, didn't say the 8th and 9th century. And says you must apply them literally in the modern world. Thank God most Muslims don't do that. But the fact is that it's very hard, therefore, to condemn ISIS or delegitimize ISIS, because ISIS simply says, I read all of their Dabiq magazines where they use copious citations from the Quran and the Hadith and the examples of Muhammad's life and other Islamic scholars. It's really hard to delegitimize ISIS because they simply say, well, we're just being the very perfectly obedient Muslims, and you people that aren't going by this are the ones that aren't being a good Muslim. So this is part of what's going on here. And it's easier, I think, for the mass of people who may not like ISIS but can't bring themselves to condemn it for the reasons I just said. It's just easier to take refuge in conspiracy theories than it is to actually deal with the problematic issues.
I think also because the Islamic religion preaches that this is the final word of Allah. This is God's will. You are the people. You are the ones who are going to inherit and rule everything. And the fact that they don't, well, it's obviously has to be some kind of conspiracy.
Right. Whether it's the Masons or the Jews or the Americans or all of the above, it's someone else. You're right.
Yeah. Sir, if somebody wants to know more about your books and about your website, Mighty Watch, tell me about those and how people can access them.
Well, all of my books are on Amazon right now, so just go to Amazon and find me. Or my website, which is, as you said, Mahdi Watch, MAHDIWatch.org, where I specifically track Islamic eschatological and apocalyptic movements, but I also throw other stuff in occasionally. So either one of those places would work.
You know, for example, I saw about your Tolkien book on that site, and I'm going to have to read that one.
I do Middle Earth and the Middle East.
Okay. Dr. Furnish, I want to thank you very much for being our guest today. Thank you so much for your work and for shedding light on this topic.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
World Lutheran News Digest may be heard every Saturday at 9:30 a.m. and again on Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Worldwide KFUO Radio. It may also be heard anytime streaming online at kfuo.org. Join us again next Saturday for another new edition of World Lutheran News Digest. I'm your host, Kip Allen.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.